Welcome to the Case Interview Podcast. If you're tired of BS, generic case interview advice, then you've come to the right place. Here, we'll share practical insights, systems, and techniques that we've battle-tested with real candidates to help them get their offers at top consulting firms like McKinsey, BCG, and Bain. If you want to know more about our work, visit craftingcases.com and get instant access to our exclusive case prep material. Now, let's go on to today's episode.
So, Julio, love it or hate it, most candidates will spend countless hours doing mock interviews, dozens of them, before they actually go to their consulting interviews. And a lot of people love doing them. Most people don't.
Yeah. I'm on the hate team.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are not in the hate team, but they don't love it either.
Yeah.
And I've seen like preposterous amounts of interviews done by candidates. I even saw this guy on Prep Lounge once, who's had just on that platform, he's had done 176 mock interviews.
Wow.
So he's probably done more outside Prep Lounge. And I caught myself wondering, like, what has he learned in his 176th that he hadn't by his 175th mock interview? So I wanted to bring this episode to our listeners on how many mock interviews should I do? Because a lot of people, everyone thinks that because, you know, they're spending a lot of time doing it. And it's not obvious. Some people say 30, some people say 50, some people say no more than 10. I've heard that. I've heard people saying hundreds. I've heard people saying it depends, but then they don't say it depends on what. And the truth is, like, of course you need to do some to start with, to know what you're doing, to know how the interview is going to go. But at some point, everyone catches themselves thinking, like, why am I doing this anyway?
Yeah. Let me cut you off before before you tell people why they're doing mock interviews.
Okay.
I want to tell people why I hate them.
Okay.
Because the truth is, mock interviews suck.
Did you hate them as a candidate or do you hate them as a coach, teacher?
I actually love them as a candidate.
Okay.
I hate them. I hate them as a coach and as a teacher.
Okay.
Because they hardly ever get candidates where I wanted them to be.
Mm-hmm.
So why do I hate them? Why do they suck?
Yeah.
Basically, mock interviews suck because they are frustrating, misleading, and time-consuming.
Mm-hmm.
They're frustrating because there are so many of them that just don't work. Like, there's a lot of mock interviews that you do and you get a bad partner or they'll get a bad case.
Yeah.
And the mock interview is just going to go completely to waste.
Yeah.
Now, that's time-consuming as well, but that's mostly frustrating because you're spending your time and you don't have much of it to practice, and it's just going nowhere.
And you maybe had like a couple slots in that week to do a mock interview.
Exactly.
And then you spent one and it was worthless.
Yeah, or sometimes the case won't have the specific building block that you need to practice the most, for example. That happens a lot. It's also misleading because sometimes candidates just don't know what to tell you, like your mock interview partner.
As feedback, you mean?
As a feedback, yeah. Or they don't have such a clear picture of what a case is. So they'll ask you something that an interviewer wouldn't ask you. Or they give you feedback like, if you're giving a list, give them numbers, like thing number one, thing number two, thing number three, which of course is good, but that's not real case interview feedback that's going to get you
that's
the offer.
That's not the thing that actually is harming the person. Like,
exactly,
they probably read that in a book and then it came to their mind as they were doing the case and they say, oh, I'm going to say that line from the book.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's not the relevant line for that specific person.
Yeah, exactly. But the biggest problem to me is that it's time consuming.
Yeah.
Like, let's say you need to practice a specific skill, which is the case for most candidates out there after they've like gone through the beginning of their preparation. They need to practice a specific skill, a specific question.
Right.
So they'll do a mock interview. They're going to take some time finding a partner, scheduling, going to what the mock interview, then their partner is going to be a little bit late. Then they got to do a case with the partner. Then it's time for their case. And then there's the full case, but only one part of it might be
irrelevant.
The question that they need to practice. So for 10 minutes of practice, they spent maybe 4 hours. If that case doesn't go to waste, if the partner is good, if the case is good, if their question is in there.
And the feedback you get from that relevant question is often not very good. Like one phrase that I hear more experienced candidates saying over and over again is that it feels like the blind leading the blind. So
yeah.
One specific example of this is sometimes a candidate does say that they want to improve their initial framework,
yeah.
which most cases will have. So they did a great framework, and then the feedback they get mm-hmm. from the other candidates is, oh, it wasn't a good framework because you missed this thing.
Yeah.
And usually it's not really relevant. Like that thing wasn't even relevant in the case. It's just something that's on the pre-made framework the candidate is used to use to using. And the framework from the candidate who did the customized framework is actually better because mm-hmm. it didn't have that irrelevant thing that most people say.
Mm-hmm.
But then the feedback that they get is that they must have added barriers to entry or segmentations to that. And it's not even useless feedback. It's destructive feedback. It's worse than if they had done a framework drill, for example, in our free course or in our structuring course, that we would have said, hey, if you missed these three issues, it would have been nice, but it's not a big deal. If you miss these three other issues, those are must-haves, so you must improve that. And this is why they're must-haves. And these are things that a lot of people say mm-hmm. that aren't relevant. So, like, a video would have been better than a mock interview in many cases because it's the blind leading the blind. Another thing that it's kind of like a saying that I've heard once. I don't think it's a common saying, but it resonates, which is like who's the best driver? Is it a taxi driver who has like 40 years of experience with like 12 hours of traffic a day? Or is it the person who's learning to drive, I don't know, like Formula One cars,
mm-hmm.
But they just have 2 years of experience with Formula One? And it's obviously the Formula One pilot or driver, however you want to call it, because they learn techniques. They push their skills to the edge.
Yeah.
They're in a high speed, high performance, high reaction time or low reaction time environment versus the taxi driver who's just doing it over and over and over again. And they don't really get better with more experience, which reminds me of the guy with 176 cases. Like maybe he was a great candidate who's always pushing further. Most likely, he was just doing more and more and more cases mindlessly.
Yeah, maybe he was optimized to impressing candidates rather than impressing interviews.
That's a good point. Yeah. But there are reasons to do mock interviews, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not useless. We do recommend most people do them. And I wanted to go through four reasons
mm-hmm.
why you should do mock interviews and the nuances of them. Because if you know the nuances, you know, oh, this mock interview I'm doing for reason number two or reason number three.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the goal of it.
Yeah.
And once I reach this goal, it's going to be clear that I don't need to do mock interviews for this reason anymore. Maybe I'll do for a different reason. Or maybe I'll stop doing them.
All right. So
at all.
If you're going to bring up the reasons why they should do mock interviews, then I'm going to do the other side because I hate them. And I'm going to bring up how not to do mock interviews, how to achieve that same goal. But
sounds good.
Doing at least as possible, at least.
Okay, sounds good. So reason number one is to understand how it feels to do a case. So that's in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you've read something about a case or you watched a 101 introductory video
mm-hmm.
about cases. Maybe you did some of our free course to understand like how each part of the case works. What are the six types of questions you get? What is the interviewer expecting from each of those questions? And what steps you... So you have the basics, the fundamentals down.
Yeah.
But you still haven't done a case.
Yeah.
You know how it works. You know how to answer each question. You've watched people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know how it feels to be under pressure, under time pressure with another person not understanding exactly what you're saying, asking you to clarify. They're asking maybe follow-up questions, which is something that a lot of candidates don't do when they're in the interviewer role, but it happens a lot in interviews, and some good candidates do. Those candidates who have used our free course will do follow-up questions. And if you don't understand how it feels, it's kind of like studying how to ride a bike.
Uh-huh.
And then doing the bike thing on the gym in the stationary bike. So you kind of know how to pedal, you know, like how you've used a scooter before, so you kind of know how to balance.
Yeah.
You know the parts, but you have never ridden a bike before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's different. So that's reason number one. What would you say about this one?
You have to do mock interviews.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for that. There is no substitute for that. Like, you don't need to do 20 mock interviews for that. One is okay. Three is best for this very goal, in my opinion.
Yeah, max five for this goal. I'd say three or four is reasonable for this goal. Tops five.
Mm-hmm.
After five, you have a good feeling, right?
Yeah.
You understand how it feels to be on the other side of the table as a candidate.
Yeah, and I think this is something that you absolutely need. Like, if you had only one day to prepare, then for this very goal, I would still do a mock interview.
One, if you had one day.
Yeah, one day, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Like, if you had maybe 5 days, I would still only do one. But that's another.
I'd do three, but okay.
That's another topic.
Yeah. One, I wouldn't say close substitute for that, but one thing that, like, if you can't do mock interviews at all, if you're in an isolated island with no other people who know anything about consulting, you have no internet access, Well, you need internet access for this, but let's say you can't do streaming, right? You can just, you don't have the bandwidth, the internet bandwidth to do that. One substitute that's not very good for that, but it's okay, is to watch videos of people doing interviews, mock interviews, and pausing after each question from the interviewer side, try to answer it yourself.
Yeah.
It's not enough because you don't have the reaction from the other side to your answer.
Yeah.
But if you try to answer those questions out loud, you may pick up some things like, oh, it's hard to think and speak at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I ramble a lot. Oh, that's weird. Like, I ramble more than Bruno does when he's podcasting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree that it's essential.
Yeah, at least this is something that they can do right now instead of a mock interview that they're going to have to schedule for 4 days from now or whatever.
But it doesn't substitute completely. You still need to do reason number one, to need to do a few mock interviews to get the feeling of being on the candidate side. Otherwise, you will get that feeling on the real interview.
Yeah.
And then it's stressful.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
What's reason number two?
Reason number two is to learning to drive the case or to control the case in a more advanced level. So what I mean by this is if you go through our free course and you do drills and everything that we recommend, you will learn how to answer each type of question. So how to start a case with a framework or with an issue tree, how to brainstorm ideas and generate hypotheses in a structured way, how to solve analysis, how to read and interpret charts, how to test hypotheses, how to speak words on how you would test that hypothesis and everything that comes with that. So you know the parts.
Yeah.
Right? And if you've done like 3 mock interviews, you know how it feels like to be in that situation where you have to answer and work through all of these types of questions with another person interviewing you. But you still don't know how to drive the case. And by that, I mean taking control of the case. So if the interviewer gives you a question, you need to be able to not only create a good framework for that, but also suggest next steps. And unless you're interviewing with McKinsey, because they do an interviewer-led style, so the interviewer is going to ask you for sure what the next question, you need to suggest, oh, the next step I would do is this, and the way I would structure this is this.
Mm-hmm.
So you're tying the building blocks, the types of questions together, and making a whole out of the parts.
Okay.
Okay, so an analogy that I like to use is... let's say you want to cook a meal, And you, when you're a young chef, of course you know how to cook because you're a chef, but in a restaurant, you start by doing just the mise en place, just, you know, cutting vegetables.
Yeah.
And then you go into a more advanced role, you're just sauteing the onions or whatever. And then you go into another role, which I don't know if it's more advanced or not, but you're doing the, I don't know, you're grilling the steaks, right? Yeah. And in high-level restaurants, each person has a specific function that they need to master so they can progress in their career.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of like practicing the building blocks.
Mm-hmm.
You're practicing each skill independently. But if you are to be a great chef, or if you just want to show your parents that you're actually learning how to cook, you need to be able to tie these things together.
Mm-hmm.
And this, the whole is larger than the sum of the parts because there's timing involved. Like, you have to cut the vegetables, but then you have to also, I don't know, warm up the pan so that the oil is sizzling as you put the vegetables in.
Yeah.
And then you have to turn on the grill in the middle of that. Like, there's different things you do to connect the parts that if you just practice the parts independently, you're not doing the whole meal, and you could still make a mistake in the whole meal, even if you're a master of each part. So, yeah, maybe I it's a long example, but that's what I mean by driving the case. And I think it's essential to do at least some mock interviews to learn that. What would you say?
I would say, I think that this is where a lot of people spend many of their interviews. And I think that they do it in an efficient way. So
inefficient
way. Yeah. I think that what happens to most candidates is they learn how to drive the case while they learn the parts.
Mm-hmm.
And so it ends up taking forever.
Right.
So they don't know how to perform each of the building blocks, each of the skills. And they're already doing mock interviews and trying to learn both at the same time. And so they end up screwing everything up and they don't know why. They don't know which part they're screwing up.
Yeah.
So I think that people spend maybe 10, maybe more cases learning to drive the case. But if they learned each of the building blocks before and practiced each of the building blocks before.
Or in parallel.
But
actual separate targeted practice.
Yeah. I would say before, but still. Then when they get to do mock interviews, they can learn how to drive the case in just 2 or 3 mock interviews.
That's reasonable for most styles of cases, I think. If it's a pure candidate-led case, like the interviewer won't say a word besides giving you data that you actively request.
Mm-hmm.
And these are rare. I've only seen them with like some BCG interviewers. It's not even that common in BCG anymore.
Yeah.
But in that very pure candidate-led style that the interviewer's quiet and they just give you data that you actually actively request, I think you may need more than 3, maybe 5 or 10. But yeah, I agree. Like for McKinsey, you don't even need that many. Like you may not even need one of them because you've already done some. The interviewer is going to actively control the case for you. And I agree. I think I'd be more on the, like to be on the safe side, I'd be like, I'd say 5 or 10 for these. Unless you're tight on time, then I agree that 3 is more than enough.
Yeah.
Because you're tight on time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree that this lack of isolation between learning and mastering the parts and trying to do that together with learning to drive and control the case.
Yeah.
That's what leads people to do 30, 40, 50 cases and still be mediocre.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like they do 50 cases and then they go into the interview and they make
rookie mistakes.
Yeah. I was going to say dumb, but I think you're more polite than me. Thanks for that one. So I think that's one of the reasons. It's like trying to learn to cook properly like a Michelin star chef and never like having the time to learn how to like the proper technique to cut vegetables, for instance, or to, you know, grill a steak on charcoal, you know?
Yeah.
You're doing like everything at once and you get lost and you never put your brain and your muscles, in the case of cooking, to actually learn that thing.
Yeah, so your food sucks and you never know whether it's because you don't know how to do each one of the things or because you don't know how to mix them up together.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, what's reason number three?
Reason number three, I think, is when you're in an intermediate level, so you already know how to drive the case, you already have a certain mastery of the parts, so of each of the six building blocks, but you don't have... And by the way, if you're listening to this and or watching this and you're wondering what are the six building blocks, go to our free course, craftingcases.com/free course.
Yeah.
And we teach the six types of questions, the six types of skills you need, the isolated skills that you need to solve cases well. But back to reason number three. So you know how to drive the case fairly well. Mm-hmm. You can start... solve the parts in the middle of the case and then tie up the case with a nice recommendation at the end.
Yeah.
You have a certain mastery of each of the six building blocks, or at least a certain level of skill. I wouldn't say mastery yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not sure where you're weak at.
Okay.
So you need to diagnose, like, what parts am I good at and what parts do I consistently make mistakes about. Now, a lot of this diagnosis you can do in isolation.
Yeah.
Right? So if you cut vegetables poorly, you don't need to cook a whole meal to learn that. You can just cut your vegetables and see if they're, you know, nice and standardized and, you know, the pieces are the right size. And same for cases. Like, if you want to see if you solve an analysis well, you can do a bunch of analysis of math questions and see if you get to the right answer through a structured process that's repeatable, you have a good insight at the end and so on. You don't need to do a whole case for most of these situations, but some people, they are quite good in isolation, but because of bad habits, because it's not intuitive to them yet, because they haven't reached fluency in that specific skill yet, when they're in the stress, in the stressful situation of doing a case, that they have to think of multiple things at the same time, remember parts of the case that have gone and try to see how they're going to move the case forward afterwards, they have some blind spots or parts, specific skills that they're not very good at when they're doing the case, even if they might be good at when doing them in isolation. So I think that's reason number three. You need to diagnose some issues, or if you don't know of any issues and you think you're good, find some new blind spots.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's the third reason. What do you think of it?
I think that diagnostics is a fair reason for doing mock interviews. When it comes to diagnostics, the way I would do it is... first, use our free course to do it, because it's structured in a way that if your weakness is obvious, you will find it.
Yeah.
And it's the fastest way to find it, because all of the parts are there. There's no chance on it.
And there's subparts.
Exactly.
Steps, yeah.
Yeah. But if your weakness is not clear with the free course, then I would move on to mock interviews, because that's where someone else is going to be looking with you. And that's also where you're going to get the randomness, the pressure, the data overload, everything that you need to find the weakest link in your chain.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, they don't know when to stop when doing this. So they're at a certain level, like let's call it first round ready or first round pretty much ready. Like they could pass a first round. And they want to find new weak spots, new blind spots, but they do over and over and over again. They do like 10, 20, 30 extra mock interviews to find these things. And the way that I think is more time efficient and also more useful, more pleasurable to do is to do two or three mock interviews kind of in a row,
Yeah.
And see if any pattern emerges.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have to consider like your past patterns that you've identified.
Mm-hmm.
But in two or three mock interviews, you'll probably find one thing that you could have improved.
Yeah.
That you could have made your habits better, that you could learn a new technique that will help, for example, with catching your math mistakes before the interviewer sees them.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this pattern in two of the three interviews that I did. So I'm going to find techniques and practice that in isolation through drills.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, not always do I structure my brainstorming, my creativity questions before giving ideas. And mm-hmm. I know this is wrong because I've watched your guys' free course.
Yeah.
And I know how to do it, but I don't always do it. So this is a weakness of mine. So I'm going to try to go back to Drew. So what I do is cycles of two and or three mock interviews, find one or two patterns that I could improve that are weak links, that are blind spots, and then go back to solo practice, finding techniques, doing high quality drills
mm-hmm.
to improve that. And perfect. Then once I think I have improved, I'll do another cycle of two, three mock interviews
mm-hmm.
and see, number one, if the problem is fixed. And number two, if I find a new blind spot or a new weakness.
Makes
Would you
sense.
Agree with that?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. So in this case, like the first two reasons, we can put numbers into it. So reason number one is like 1, 3, maximum 5 mocks to get a feeling of how a case feels. Number two, how to drive the case. You said mm-hmm. 3 or 5. I said 5 or 10 mocks. For this one, I'd say it's X numbers of 2 or 3 mock interview cycles.
Yeah.
Because you don't know how many weaknesses you have. You don't know when you have fixed all of them. So it could be one cycle if you're lucky, if you're skilled. And it could be 10 cycles of this. Mm-hmm. And it's going to tend to be less cycles of 2, 3 mock interviews for diagnosis purposes if you have a strong basis of fundamentals,
mm-hmm.
which again show the importance of learning the parts before you jump into doing an endless number of mock interviews, right?
Yeah, I agree. Is there a reason number four?
Yes, there is. And this is not for everyone, but if you're preparing long term,
mm-hmm.
Or if you have prepared for an interviewing cycle and you didn't get the offer and you don't want to lose your skills before the next cycle where you might apply,
mm-hmm.
You can do mock interviews for maintenance purposes.
Yeah.
Because it's like riding a bike or, well, you actually get back to riding a bike quite quickly. So it's like a sport. If you learn a sport at a high level of skill and then you stay like 6 months without practicing, you're going to lose some skills. So you see this a lot in winter sports. So pro skiers or snowboarders,
mm-hmm.
Obviously they practice more on season, right? So they practice every day when it's winter. But when it's summer, they go to the opposite hemisphere to get some practice.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're American or Canadian, you might go to Argentina on your summer because it's Argentinian winter. And obviously, you're not going to practice as much.
Yeah.
But you do some practice so as not to lose your skills. So most people won't need to do maintenance because mm-hmm. most people have 3-4 months.
Yeah.
And that's an intense prep season. And then they get the offer. Or maybe they don't, but they don't want to apply anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say for maintenance.
Yeah, I think that if we're talking about long-term preparation and maintenance, then you don't have the problem of a time-consuming mock interview. But if you still hate them, then there's a way. Like, I would still do maintenance mock interviews, but you can do less if you try to apply all of the skills that you've learned with case interview preparation into your day-to-day problem solving. At work, at school, at every problem that you see.
Or even hypothetical problems that you see in real life. Yeah, I agree. I'd say, yeah, if you are to do maintenance because you want to,
mm-hmm.
I'd say 1 a week is more than enough.
Yeah.
1 mock interview a week, even 2 a month, like 1 every 2 weeks. I think that keeps your skill level quite stable.
Yeah. And to be honest, at this point, it does keep your skill stable to do mock interviews every week or once every 2 weeks. But practicing the skills in your day-to-day problems or in hypothetical problems also actually helps you improve. Actually helps you to get to the next level.
Agree.
You can go further.
Like I would say it may be better to not do the maintenance cases, just do drills on the skills that you want to improve, because maybe you haven't got the offer and you know what you need to improve. And then like a month or two before your next interviews, you go strongly into mocks again. Do 5 or 10 of them, and then you're back in your mojo, right? Mm-hmm. You're back in your fluency of solving these cases with the interviewer, with trying to connect with them and show confidence and stuff.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah. Okay, so is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
I actually have something that I brought here.
Okay.
Because we haven't answered the question, right? How many should you do? We gave good heuristics on how to think about this.
Right.
What's your number?
Okay. My number is, it really depends, short on time or on a lot of time.
Okay.
But I want to give a minimum.
Okay.
Right. So to me, the minimum, if you're really short on time, would be 6.
6 mock interviews.
But if you have more time, if you have like...
And that's assuming you're doing a lot of solo practice, of course, right?
Yeah, that's assuming you're doing a ton of solo practice.
Okay.
The majority of your practice is going to be solo.
Yeah.
The very least, I think, is 6.
Yeah.
If you have like maybe less than 4 days, 1. But then...
Yeah, but then, then you're at a high risk anyway.
Yeah, and if you have a long time to practice, I would say... You can go with 20.
20. Okay. That's a fair number. I'd say 30, but I can go with 20. I agree with you that if you're short on time, I'd say depends on how short. But if you have like at least a couple of weeks, I'd say 10.
Mm-hmm.
But 6 is fine for me if you're practicing a lot with other people. And also if you're flexible, like if by your 6th you still suck, you can do some more.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
The one thing that I'd say is I have a different way of thinking about it. It's what I tell our coaching clients back then, because they always say, oh, how many mocks before I'm ready, right? Yeah. And what I'd give them is the 5-10 streak rule.
Mm-hmm.
So you can call it the Bruno's 5-10 streak rule if you want.
Okay.
I've always wanted to have a
a rule,
a brand name technique on my own name. Just kidding. So basically it's... The rule is, it doesn't matter how many mocks you do, because you can show me a candidate that has done 5.
Yeah.
And if I see their performance, I can say, well, they're ready, right? Mm-hmm. You can show me someone who's done 80 and they might not be ready. So what I think is a good rule of thumb is if you've done 5 in a row that were... past level,
yeah,
then you're ready.
Okay.
And the reason is you will need to do 5 in a row at past level at least to get an offer with a firm, right? Most firms, you have 3 interviews in first round, 2 interviews in final round. Maybe you'll have 6 in total, maybe 4, but 5 is a good rule of thumb.
Yeah.
If you can do 5 interviews without major mistakes, without major weaknesses, that means you're ready, but you still have some risk.
Yeah.
Because it's not because you did 5 that you'll be able to do the next 5.
Yeah. Right?
So that's where the 10 enters. If you want a low risk strategy, and obviously you need more time for that, when you've done 10 interviews in a row, so a streak of 10 winning interviews.
Yeah.
That you performed well, no major mistakes that you didn't recover from, then I'd say you're absolutely ready. Because if you've done 10 in a row, you can do 5 in a row. But that's the low risk strategy. So hence the 5-10 streak rule. You can pick 5 or 10 depending on your risk tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question becomes, how do I know if my performance was at a past level? And it's hard.
Yeah.
But you, if you have experienced case partners who maybe have gotten offers or at least have gone to final rounds, you can listen to their perspective. If you can afford a coach, maybe not for the 5 or 10 interviews, but for a couple of them, then you have a better calibrated view.
Yeah.
But if you don't have any of that, what you can do is see, well, did I make any case-breaking mistakes? Like, was my framework very standard and non-specific to the case? Did I make a math mistake that I didn't recover from? Was I not able to drive the case from start to finish?
Yeah.
There's these rules that you learn in our free course, for instance, that you can kind of have a checklist for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go through 5 or 10 cases and you didn't do any of these major mistakes, you can still do minor mistakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can multiply something wrong as long as you catch your mistake and redo it and get it right. Or you can forget one specific issue in your framework that is unusual, but
yeah,
it was important, but it's okay. The rest was good. You can make those mistakes, but if you didn't make any major mistakes, then I'd say you're ready. And I think that's a good rule because it's not a hard number like, oh, you need to do 30. Because anyone who says anything like that to you, they're either bullshitting you or bullshitting themselves. Or
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's it. That's how many mock interviews should you do? As little as you can.
Yes.
As long as you get to perform to that level. And I guess we could talk now about how to do solo practice effectively.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also running out of time, so...
Yeah, we'll do another episode about that.
All right, sounds good.